You are Locked On Saints, your daily New Orleans Saints podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is good, Houdat Nation and Houdat family? Welcome in to this Friday episode here at Locked On Saints, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day here, every single Monday through Friday, 5 days a week, covering your New Orleans Saints. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch. And for the New Orleans Saints, the return of Michael Thomas and Marcus Davenport will certainly make us watch this team a lot differently. And Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. On today's episode, we're going to dive into our three most impactful plays from Monday night's game with our film Friday, the win over the Los Angeles Chargers. We'll take the three most impactful plays and break down the plays so that you can follow along on NFL Game Pass or just listen in and learn a little bit more about how the plays developed. Then we'll get to your questions from Twitter and Facebook for our Friday mailbag. But before we get to any of that, the Saints and New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell are going at it, even throwing spicy shots at each other on Twitter. So we'll talk about the situation that could lead to the New Orleans Saints playing their home games at Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge. And I'll tell you exactly what I would do if I had to make the choice. Keep the Saints at home or let them travel to Death Valley. As always, I'm your host, Ross Jackson, at Ross Jackson Nola on Twitter, editor over at CanalStreetChronicles.com, and your Tuesday co-host over at the National Locked On NFL. I got all that and a little bit of lagniappe for you on today's episode of Locked On Saints, your team every day. Could the New Orleans Saints end up moving their home games to LSU to play at Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge? It's our New Orleans Saints lead story of the day today with Ross Jackson of Locked On Saints. So this has been a bit of a gridlocked battle between the New Orleans Saints, Gail Benson, everybody within the organization, and Mayor LaToya Cantrell of New Orleans. Mayor LaToya Cantrell has not progressed the city of New Orleans through phase two yet, which would mean that they're not allowed to have fans in the stands in enclosed arenas and stadiums. And so this has become a bit of a point of contention between the New Orleans Saints and the city of New Orleans, particularly the mayor, Mayor Cantrell, because there's no clear timeline in terms of the potential of progressing to phase three, which would then allow the Saints to have a certain percentage or a certain number of fans in the stands. And this is something that the Saints want, and this is something that the city needs to an extent, because according to Nick Underhill, who put the number out for us, again, just reporting facts here, that each Saints home game brings in about $1.5 million. And that's a pretty big deal, because eventually that money is going to have to come from somewhere. The Saints don't usually dip into the general fund, but they might have to, because there's essentially 10 home games, which include the regular season, 8 home games, and the 2 preseason games, then potentially postseason games after that, that this team and this city are losing. And so that's one of the things that is creating that point of contention, is sort of the funding question around what do you do if you're not getting that money? Where does that money come from? Certain things like that. And so with this going on and this going down between the team and the mayor, and you're starting to see them kind of go back and forth with each other on Twitter, the New Orleans Saints put out a tweet in response to Mayor Cantrell's statement about how no team around the NFL at this moment with a fixed dome stadium has had any fans in the stands in terms of even a limited capacity, 25%, 20%, anything like that. And so the Saints responded by saying there have actually been several games played under a closed roof. Now, the key difference here is that Mayor LaToya Cantrell's comment was about fixed roofs, and most of, if not all of the roofs that are stadiums that the Saints listed in their tweet were all retractable roofs. But regardless, this sort of back and forth is going on between the city and the team has said that they are willing to go and play their home games moving forward, which will probably be after the Week 7 game, in Baton Rouge at Tiger Stadium. And the mayor of Baton Rouge is welcoming them. LSU is welcoming them. The NFL is aware that this, you know, transition could potentially happen for the Saints. And even Mayor Cantrell herself has kind of called the bluff, if you will, by saying, I think that them going to Baton Rouge is a great solution and everybody wins from that situation. And so it's interesting to me because not everybody wins, because then that means that that's travel for, you know, New Orleans Saints fans that live in New Orleans. And with travel comes risk, things like that. So I've been asked a couple of times, what is it that I would do if I was in the situation? Which decision would I make? Would I allow a limited capacity of fans into the Superdome, or would I let the Saints go to LSU to play at Death Valley and play at Tiger Stadium? And I think for me, it's neither of those things. And what I mean by that is that if you're going to go and play in a different stadium, play in a different place to find an outdoor venue so that you can have the limited amount of fans that you want, the 20,000, 25,000 people, then I'm going to try to find another way to maybe compromise with you. Like, maybe I can't give you 20,000, 25,000, but maybe I can give you 5,000 to 10,000 at Yulman Stadium in Tulane. That way I can keep you in New Orleans. That way I can keep you home and give you an outdoor stadium and give you a fan presence. And maybe that's not the greatest solution, but that's what I would at least try to do. I would at least try to do something that kept the team at home for the city of New Orleans. Then I'm going to at least try to keep this one thing, the thing that is most important to the state of Louisiana, the thing that is most important to the city of New Orleans, I'm going to try to keep that from going away. I'm going to try to say, okay, let's see if this works. And maybe we start off smaller, because Yulman Stadium only has a capacity for 30,000, excuse me. So I can't give you 20, 25,000 in there. Then we're basically filling the stadium. But maybe we start at 3,000. Maybe we start at 5,000. Maybe we start at 10,000, something like that, to kind of figure out how this goes. And I would require certain little things. Deuce Windham and Elias Williams and I were talking about this on Hudak Confessional, about what if people had to do COVID tests and show proof of a negative COVID test that took place within 3 days of the event, things like that. Like, try to find it, because people that want to go will do that. They'll say, okay, great. If I go get a COVID test and then I can go and watch the Saints play, great. I will go and do that. Like, people will do that. So that would be my solution. Find a way to keep the team in New Orleans, but still create a safe environment for people to be able to go and see the games and follow the protocols that we have already seen working across the NFL and open air stadiums. So we'll see exactly how this all plays out. The Saints may potentially be moving their home games after a certain point through the rest of the season up to Baton Rouge. And if that's the case, they'll be able to implement the protocols that we've seen working across the NFL for fan safety. And so if people want to go to those games and choose to go, then they can. And it's an outdoor stadium, all those things that fit within the ground rules of what are being set by the state. So they would be allowed to do that. And hopefully some of that revenue comes back to the city of New Orleans some way or another, because the city's hurting right now. So, I mean, I get the idea of wanting to jumpstart the economy by having the games. I really get it from both sides here. And so, but you know, you heard what I would do. I would at least try to keep them in New Orleans, but provide the safest environment possible to do so, even if that meant moving them to an outdoor venue within or at least close to the city of New Orleans. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But coming up next, we're going to jump through and we're going to talk a little bit about the three most impactful plays from Monday's win against the Los Angeles Chargers, and get to your questions from Twitter and Facebook for our Friday mailbag. We got that coming up for you next. You're on Locked On Saints, your team every day. Real quick, though, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Built Go. It's by Built Bar, our good friends over there that make the best tasting protein bars. Well, now they have the best tasting protein gel as well. They're basically little 1.5 ounce packages that you can carry with you in your briefcase, in your gym bag, your golf bag, wherever it is. Nice and convenient and immediately available to you. It's basically like an energy shot with some protein and without the crash at the end. So it's much better than like the 5-hour energy drinks and things like that. You've got three delicious flavors as well, peanut butter, honey. You've also got chocolate, coconut, and of course, my favorite, chocolate mint. It's a collagen protein, which is fast absorbing, gets right into your system fast, and it's easy on the stomach and gives you all the things that you need for a nice little boost to ignite your work as well, with beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine. So go ahead and check them out. You can visit builtgo.com. Use the promo code LOCKED, L-O-C-K-E-D, and you're going to get 20% off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at builtgo.com. Let's go. All right, Huda Nation, continuing on with today's episode of Locked On Saints. We moved our Film Watch Wednesday segment to today, which would be our usual Film Friday, to where we're looking at the film of the opposing team. We'll get back to that usual rhythm next week. We're going to start off with Jared Cook's touchdown, which tied the Saints up with the Chargers in the fourth quarter. We'll talk about the big throw and touchdown to Mike Williams to put the Chargers back on top in the fourth quarter. And then we'll look at Alvin Kamara's incredible catch, but the play around it was something that you love to see from Sean Payton. It's something that we didn't get to see much last year, so I want to highlight it this year. So any additional plays that you want to see, let me know, and then I'll find the three most voted for plays, I guess I'll say, and then we'll look at those on Wednesday. So let's go ahead and get into it. Starting off with the Jerry Cook touchdown. This is on 3rd and 14 in the fourth quarter, 11 minutes, 46 seconds. Ball is on the 41. Saints are down 13-20. So here we go. They're out here in a trips formation again. Remember, we saw a touchdown out of trips formation last week as well with Alvin Kamara when he ran, or not a touchdown, but the big fourth down conversion, 29 pass when he ran the wheel route out of this one. So this time, Alvin Kamara is in the backfield. You've got Marquez Callaway, who's playing the X, so he's over on the weak side, far side from the screen. And then near side, as you're looking, you've got, in order from inside to out, Jared Cook on the inside. Then you've got Tre'Quan Smith in the slot and Emmanuel Sanders on the outside at the Z. So what they're going to do here is they're going to have Marquez Callaway run a drag all the way across the field. They're going to take Jared Cook and cross him from the hash marks over to the opposite side. So he's basically going to run a big over crosser that goes across to the far side of the screen. He's going to get the touchdown. But what I love about this play is that they also bring in and run a dagger concept where you get Tre'Quan Smith, who kind of uses a spray release to the inside and then curves back up to essentially what is a go route. And then you have Emmanuel Sanders run a big in route, a deep in route to get to. And what this is going to do, we talk about conflict defenders a lot. This is going to create several conflict defender problems for the Los Angeles Chargers defense. So let's go ahead and start rolling the play here. So you're going to see Jared Cook start to cross over the middle of the field. Now, the thing about this play is that you've essentially got a cover three look, but the two outside zones are playing a little shallow because they're playing at the first down marker because it's a 3rd and 14 in this case. The issue for Nazir, it takes place here for Nazir Adderley. Remember I talked about Tre'Quan Smith running a bit of a spray release to the inside and then curving back up to run out? Well, that puts Nazir Adderley, the safety number 24 at the very top of the screen or the very far end of the screen, it puts him in the position of being a conflict defender. He has to make a choice, and the choice he makes is wrong. He takes one step towards Tre'Quan Smith here, and that is enough for Jared Cook to run free and for Drew Brees to pull the trigger. And by the time that he catches that ball, Jared Cook, he has nobody in front of him. There's nobody there. The other thing to point out about this play is that that low cover three defender that's on the top of the screen, number 44, is linebacker Kazir White. So they were also dropping a linebacker into a deep zone here on the outside to protect a deep third of the field. You're not going to win that battle. And Jared Cook simply beats his linebacker off the line of scrimmage because that linebacker is playing with trail technique and outside leverage, thinking that he has safety help over the top and on the inside. But basically, the safety is just put in a position to where whichever decision he makes, Drew Brees is going the other way. He makes the decision to jump over toward Tre'Quan Smith. Jared Cook gets the touchdown. All right, now let's take a look at an impactful play on the other side. So this is after the Saints have already tied the game up with the Chargers. They've exchanged a couple of punts, and now the Chargers are in a 3rd and 10 situation. So this is very much like what the Saints just had with their 3rd and 14 situation and getting a big touchdown out of it, except that this one goes for 64 yards and busted coverage. So the real thing that you need to watch on this play as you're watching it is that you have up at the top of the screen, you've got Mike Williams in motion before the play. He goes from the inside trips formation to going to the opposite side, to the strong side, and he lines up outside of the numbers. And so what you're watching here is you're going to be looking at the two defenders that are at the top of your screen. The one on the furthest outside, that's PJ Williams. Excuse me, that's Patrick Robinson. And then the one that's backing up into a safety look is PJ Williams. PJ Williams playing deep safety. You've got Malcolm Jenkins, who, remember, the Saints brought in because they wanted some help in coverage at the safety position. Malcolm Jenkins playing up against the line of scrimmage. He's going to be guarding the other receiver at the top of the screen, which is Hunter Henry. Does a pretty good job there. So just go ahead and roll through this play, and we'll do it slowly. So as we track through here, what you're going to see is Patrick Robinson take a trail technique, and he's keeping his eyes down the field on the quarterback. He's playing zone. That's what you expect him to do. But because he's playing zone, he is expecting to be able to pass this receiver off to the deep safety on his side, which is PJ Williams. But the issue is that PJ Williams bites down onto Hunter Henry's route, which is run all the way to the first down marker. He does not have to guard the first down marker because you have Malcolm Jenkins and CJ Gardner-Johnson standing pat at that first down marker. So he doesn't have to worry about that. All he has to do is worry about his assignment, which is to do and essentially get the same type of depth. If you look at the opposite safety, Marcus Williams, Look at the depth that he gets on the play before the ball is thrown. That's where PJ Williams should be in terms of his depth and his dropback to cover the deep other half of the field. He doesn't do that. Patrick Robinson thinks he has a safety to pass Mike Williams off to. He does not. And then that's what ends up blowing this play wide open. If you just watch it through broadcast view and listen to the commentators in the booth, we all assume that this was Patrick Robinson busting coverage. But really, this was another example, because remember, we saw this a few weeks ago with PJ Williams playing a cover four safety role. This is another busted coverage by PJ Williams at the safety position, not on Patrick Robinson. All right. And finally, now we're going to jump to Alvin Kamara's big 28-yard catch. This is later on in the fourth quarter, 1:53 left, a first and 10 play. They're on the 43, the opposite 43. So this is a good time to look down the field. And this is exactly what the Saints do. The formation that you're going to see here is a tight bunch formation. You have three receivers on the top of your screen that are in a bunch formation. You've got Marquez Callaway at the peak of the triangle. On the far side, you've got Emmanuel Sanders. On the near side, you've got Traquan Smith. And then on the near side of the formation, in terms of the screen, you've got Jared Cook. And then you've got Alvin Kamara on the right hip of Drew Brees. Everything about this play design, except for Alvin Kamara's route, is built to condense the defense into the middle of the field. All three routes that are run by the wide receivers are staying within the numbers. Jared Cook's go route is a clear out route to keep somebody within the numbers. So he's going to try to pull both safeties up the field. And then essentially what you're going to see is all of the defense condensed to the middle of the field, except for one defender who is stuck going man to man with Alvin Kamara down the right side of the field. No other player aside from Alvin Kamara and his defender get outside the numbers on this play. And that's the beauty of it. This is really, really good play design. Everything stays compact for the Chargers defense. Let's go ahead and roll this. At the snap, you can see the entire defense stay compact between the numbers. Alvin Kamara at the bottom of your screen goes out on a wheel route. And this is something we used to see from Sean Payton all the time with Alvin Kamara. We didn't get to see it a bunch last year because he was hurt, but this wheel route is working between Alvin Kamara and Drew Brees. This is now the second week in a row that we've seen Alvin Kamara run that wheel route from a different place, from a different spot. He ran it from the inside of the trips formation last week. Now we see him come out this week and then run it out of the backfield. This is something you want to continue to see between Drew Brees and Alvin Kamara and as a play caller from Sean Payton, because this continues to work. And of course, Alvin Kamara, who gets one-on-one here with Rayshon Jenkins on the outside. Again, the only defender that gets outside the numbers is the one that's manned up with Alvin Kamara. So that's a one-on-one situation. Alvin Kamara might be a running back, but he makes catches like a wide receiver, and he makes this juggling, acrobatic, concentration focus, ridiculous catch over his defensive back and over his defender here to pick up the first down and put the Saints in position to tie this game up once more and send it to overtime with less than 2 minutes to go. All right, y'all, so that does it for our film watch Wednesday on Friday. I guess we have another film watch Wednesday coming up, though, with no Saints game in between. So let me know three more plays that you want to see from the Los Angeles Chargers game, the win against the Chargers. We'll break those down for you on Wednesday. So get me those, Facebook, Twitter, email, however it is that you want to get them to me. Coming up next, though, we'll get to your questions from Twitter and Facebook here in just a moment on Locked On Saints, your team every day. All right, Huda Nation, we're going to wrap up today's episode with your questions from Twitter and from Facebook for our Friday mailbag here. I'm going to jump over to Twitter first because Noren Rad asked three questions, and I think the last question is absolutely hysterical. So let's start off with the first one. How often do the Saints get in a two deep safety man under defense? Seems like this would help with the big plays. They actually do it pretty often. I mean, the last time we really looked at those percentages and everything, we saw that they were running cover two at, hold on, I got the numbers right here, at about 12.5%. So with that being the case, I think that they're running it pretty often, and they're doing what they're running it when they need to. And of course, you know, one of the plays that we just looked at in the last segment, which was the touchdown to Mike Williams, that was a cover two look, right? So I think that it kind of just depends upon the situation. And then the execution too. I think, you know, we're seeing the plays getting called, but unfortunately they're not working at all times. But I do think you're seeing it enough that maybe if it is working, this thing's been running a lot of Tampa too as well, to where they're dropping Alex Anzalone deeper into that look as well in the middle zone there. So they're running them, but it really just comes down to the execution of them once they're run. So next question from Noren, talking about Marquez Callaway over Benny Fowler at this point moving forward. Can't risk him on the practice squad. I think that's right. I mean, at least on the offensive side, I think they're both going to continue to play special teams. Benny Fowler has been great as a gunner for you He's made some really nice plays there in both in terms of tackles, but also covering punts and downing punts within the five and things like that. So you like what you see from him, but he has struggled a little bit over on the offensive side to get the type of depth on routes that Drew Brees is expecting. The nuances aren't necessarily there. Marquez Callaway, though, they really liked what they saw from him during that Los Angeles Chargers game. So I do think you see him a little bit more than Fowler moving forward. And then last, and this is my favorite question, is being a Saints fan a pre-existing condition? And if so, is it covered by the Affordable Care Act? Because my heart can't take this. My brother, I feel you 100%. And I sure hope it is, because I don't know how much longer I could do this. I told y'all on Monday, I was like, look, be ready, because this just might simply be what the Saints season looks like. And even that hurt my heart saying it. I can't even imagine how y'all feel hearing it. All right, let's jump over to Facebook here. This is a question from Lauren Rabb, but it's also followed up on by Mike Paradiso, who asked a little bit more specifically about a certain player. So Lauren asked, with the trade line quickly approaching, what moves do you think that Mickey and Sean might make? And then Mike had also asked a similar question, but asked about Quinnen Williams, the interior defensive lineman from the New York Jets. And Mike, I'm kind of in line with you because, and Lauren, to answer your question, I always thought that for the Saints that like the trade deadline would be the perfect time for them to scrounge up that edge rusher that they were looking for, that third edge rusher that they were looking for during the offseason. They were so willing to change the entire rule book to get Jadeveon Clowney there, and it was going to cost them a second round pick. They were willing to part ways with that, and Mike suggested getting the second year guy, Quinnen Williams, with a second round pick, which I think would be possible. But I don't know if they need to. I think that the biggest thing in terms of the edge rusher is that they're covered at this point because Trey Hendrickson has played really well, Marcus Davenport coming back in. But you're right, the interior defensive line for the future is the rest of that conversation. So how comfortable are the Saints with Malcolm Roach? How comfortable are they with Shy Tuttle? Do they feel like they need to bulk up there? This is also a really good interior defensive line class coming up in the draft as well. But we know that the Saints don't like to fill holes in the draft. So maybe making that move now makes sense. I can't really think about any other place where I would see the Saints going out and making a move, unless maybe they felt like they needed to get another, maybe a third safety, maybe a Marcus May or something like that from the Jets, potentially getting another safety to play that role they're trying to fill with PJ Williams, but with another player that you know can do it. So that would be my other suggestion. All right, let's go over to David Adams. Aside from saying Michael Thomas, which would actually be a fair response, how do you expect Sean Payton to mitigate Drew's obvious lack of deep ball moving forward? So the way that they've already done it is that they've just continued to run the offense that they've been running since like 2017, which is the quick pass, meticulous work their way down the field offense. That's what they've been doing for the past 3-4 years. I think they'll just continue doing what they've been doing. I know a lot of people are really thinking about the idea of the deep ball and the lack of it and the way that it's costing the Saints on their offensive side, but this is what we've seen them do over the past 3 to 5 years. So I'm not too entirely nervous about it. I do think, though, you're right, Michael Thomas is one of the biggest pieces to that that will allow them to continue to do that and do it more smoothly, right? Kind of like what T-Bob and I we're talking about in yesterday's episode. And then Daniel also asks, has much been said about Dennis Allen rarely running the base defense? Is this communication within the secondary due to too many variables in play? Not really. I mean, they've been running nickel as their base for about 3 years at this point. So it's not really all that surprising. And before that, they were doing the three safety sets for 2014 through 16, which were not good examples. But now they're running a more traditional nickel. And so it works fine for them, and they're able to defend the run out of there. It's just that the Saints defense always struggles against the pass early, so you're going to want to see them get that fixed. Paul Logand asked Ross, why is the secondary having so many mental mistakes, particularly Lattimore? This is a contract year. Do you see any development with number 43, as in Marcus Williams, or has he hit his growth ceiling? Should we keep him or let him walk? I'm going to be completely honest with you. Yes, I have seen improvement from Marcus Williams in some areas, like tackling, only a 10% missed tackle percentage. That was up like 20-25% over the past couple of years. So there's improvement there. But his desire to try to go through receivers as opposed to just making a play on the ball has been driving me absolutely nuts. And with that, I will say that he might have reached his growth ceiling. He might be as good, or we've already seen what he can be. I've always sort of been on the side that I think Marcus Williams is gone after this season, simply because of the fact that somebody else is going to pay him a ton of money. And this safety draft class coming in this year is absolutely incredible. And so that might be one of the other reasons to make a move for a safety now as well, a Marcus May or something like that, because then it helps you sort of cover that up so that it's not a need when you get to the draft. So it's a complicated relationship, me and Marcus Williams at this point, in terms of the way that I feel about his depth or about his growth. But we'll continue to see. We'll continue because there's still a lot more season left to play. Danny Curley, do you think that Drew Brees is reading our posts? Because I was talking about him and then he throws a deep pass to Cook. But for real though, why is the offense so inconsistent? Are we just missing pieces or something else? I think that it's just about missing pieces. They can't do what they're comfortable with because they don't have the guy right now that makes them comfortable doing it. And I think that that will all continue to get better. Joseph Spada, where do you think that AK stats will be at the end of the year? And do you think that it will be with awards? I don't know where his stats are going to be at the end of the year, but I could tell you that he's still my offensive player of the year, all told at this point moving forward. Brandon Simmons, any word on Kiko Alonso? And I know that it was Michael Murray asked about Kiko or asked about Ty Montgomery as well. Both those guys are on injured reserve. No updates on him at the moment. But Brandon also asked about, do you expect the secondary to start playing as good as we expected them before week one? Yes, I do. Maybe, I don't know, as good, maybe not, but they'll be better. That's my thing. Galen Steeles asked, do you think that Lattimore's recent play will hurt his chances for a big payday in the future? His recent play, may, if it continues, yes, right? But he's already on a fifth-year option, which they can reverse their decision on the fifth-year option if they wanted to. And so if you saw that happen, then yeah, he's in a little bit of trouble, but he still has, you know, 11 more games to play. And so it depends on what those games look like that are really going to make the decision there for the Saints. Mark Albrecht, do you think that Michael Thomas will need some time to get back into rhythm with the offense? I mean, he might, but I'm kind of hoping that he doesn't. And it's not a problem if he does, because Emmanuel Sanders, Tre'Quan Smith, like these other receivers are already in rhythm and they're looking good. So they'll be fine. I know he struggled a bit week one, but I think Michael Thomas is going to be so pissed when he gets back out on the field that that's going to make up for any type of rhythm that he needs to find. And then finally, we've got Michael Murray, who asked, we have an injury status update on Deontay Harris and when he will return and what the injury was. So the injury was a hamstring injury. It was suffered during the fourth quarter. It was during during the Chargers game. And he kind of hobbled off the field, but it's a hamstring injury. I don't have an update right now because the Saints aren't practicing and therefore they're not putting out injury reports during this week. And so we'll get our first update on him on Wednesday of next week. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday will be their practice days and the injury report updates. So, all right, y'all, that's going to do it for this week here at Locked On Saints. We'll be back on Monday. We'll have quite a bit of time to talk about this new news that just broke about Gail Benson being the victim of auto theft. She's fine, but what a crazy thing to happen. Hello, 2020. Welcome back. What a wild time. So we'll be able to talk about that, and then we'll be able to continue on with our review of this team. And don't forget to let me know what three plays you want to look at on Wednesday. Tell me the play you want to look at, and then we'll pick three of them to look at on Wednesday for our Film Watch Wednesday. And then we'll continue on to just get ready at that point. We'll have Bill Rossetti on Thursday to get to our crossover with the game against Carolina Panthers, so on and so forth. So lots to cover, and I expect to see y'all back on Monday right away so we can get started and continue moving forward through this week. I appreciate y'all, as always, for coming through. Y'all have a safe and blessed weekend. I appreciate y'all so, so, so much for being here. Once again, I'm your host, Ross Jackson. You can find me on Twitter at Ross Jackson, NOLA. Hit me up. Let me know how the family's doing. Let me know how you're living. Let me know how your mom and them. Tell your friends, family, and fellow Saints fans about the show. And if you haven't already, please take a moment to subscribe. Drop that 5-star rating and review. I thank you so much for all your support and for helping me grow this family. This has been Locked On Saints. And trust Who Dat Nation. I'll holla at you.